Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. You know, I tell you what, the sun is just actually going down on a beautiful, what a beautiful day we had in the most awesome city in the world, Houston, Texas. And it's just the clouds are just kind of there and the blue, and it's just a beautiful night tonight. And we're just going to have a great hour of discussion and some things we're going to talk about. Sometimes isn't easy to talk about, but in this day and age, they need to be talked about. So I just know you're really going to enjoy this evening. I want to let you know that next week, well, the whole month of April, we're going to do something very special, something we haven't done since we started the show here on BBS Radio. We're going to do a month of April as the Warriors of Hope Month, and we have a cast of people that is going to be interviewed throughout the month of April that is going to make every radio show in the country salivate, because we have some wonderful, wonderful guests. Next week's going to be Christian Moore, the author of The Resilience Breakthrough, a fantastic book, and he lives in the Rocky Mountains. We're going to have Consuelo Kickbush from Las Vegas, Nevada, and Consuelo is a lieutenant colonel and the highest ranking ever Hispanic woman in the United States Army, and she's going to be here in the month of April, and just a fantastic motivational speaker, and just has a wonderful organization now. We're going to have Roy Juarez, Jr. from San Antonio, Texas, the author of Homeless by Choice. He is one of the most sought-after motivational speakers in the country, and has an unbelievable story that you don't want to miss. And then we're going to end up the month from Georgia, Judge Stephen Teske. And you will not want to miss Judge Teske. And he's written several books, but I think one that is on right now is Reform Juvenile Justice Now. And that's all part of, and if you remember, just a few weeks ago, we had Joe and Darty Hendershot from Columbus, Ohio. Joe called me this week, and he's writing a new book and has asked me if I would do a chapter in the book. And the book is called Warriors of Hope. Each of these individuals that's going to be with us through the month of April are going to be featured in the Warriors of Hope book also. So we just decided, hey, why can we not just spend the entire month of April and just focus on that and celebrate that? And going to help Joe and Darty out a little bit, but they've just become dear friends with me, and looking forward to that conference. And so just make sure the month of April, well, every week, what else you got to do on Sunday night? You know, I had an awesome day. I just finished beef flavored ramen noodles for dinner. So I just finished my last bite of that. So I am just as happy as all get out and just ready to have a fantastic show. It just doesn't get any better than this. So this is wonderful. You know, before we get to our guest this evening that I know you're going to want to tune into, as President Trump just came across the station early today and said, it looks like we're going to have to go another month of maybe this work from home and and social distancing in our country to try to get this nightmare under control of this COVID-19. There's things that still happen in our life, positive and negative, and sometimes we don't know how to let go of the bad and hang on to the good, and we make wrong decisions. And I always like to just give you a few things to think about as we go into a new week. And sometimes these weeks, this last week was one of the longest weeks for me in the history of the world. It seemed like it anyway. But I just want to throw these out. You may want to jot these down. The past can steal your present from you if you let it. You can spend hours, days, weeks, months, even years overanalyzing a situation from the past and trying to figure out what happened and why this happened, why you didn't do that, justifying what you could have done or what you should have done, what could have happened, what should have happened. Or you can just leave the pieces in the floor and walk out the door into the sunlight. And I think sometimes we allow the past to come up into our present and it steals it away from us. So I want to encourage you this week to look to the future and don't continue living in the past. Also, happiness is not the absence of problems, but it's the ability to deal with them. Imagine all the wonderful things that your mind might embrace if it weren't so rapidly tight around your struggles, because it's not what the world takes away from you that counts. It's what you do with what you have left. Sometimes, maybe this is an hourly thing or a daily thing. Sometimes you just need to do your best and then just surrender the rest. Tell yourself sometimes, I'm doing the best I can with what I have in the moment. And that's all that I can expect of anyone, including myself. Another thing I want you to remember as we go into a new week is the only person that you can really have control of is yourself. Letting go in relationships and negative things and positive things doesn't always mean that you don't take care about others anymore. It's just simply realizing that the only person you really have control over is you. Here's another one. Some people will refuse to accept you for who you are. You might as well write that down. You're not going to keep everybody loving you. I have that issue. I always want everybody to not have anything negative about me, but I tell you what, it's hard to overcome that. Some people are just going to refuse to accept you or like you for who you are. When you're comfortable in your own skin, that's okay. It's always worth doing what's right and being true to yourself and not being hung up by what other people think about you all the time. Another one or two. You can make decisions or you can make excuses. Don't let what you can't do keep you from what you can. Now wait, did you just hear that? Don't let what you can't do stop you from what you can. Do what you can with what you have right now and stop overthinking and just start doing it. And the last one, and this is tough. Sometimes walking away is the only way to win. Never waste your time trying to explain yourself to people who have shown you that they just don't really truly care. In other words, don't define your intelligence by the number of arguments that you have won, but by the number of times you have said, this needless nonsense isn't even worth my time, and walk away. Don't waste your time on stuff that really doesn't matter. That's just a few things that thinking about, and I want you to think about this week as we go into the program tonight. I tell you what, we have an awesome guest this evening, and we're just going to welcome Dr. Teresa Gill. And for over 30 years, Dr. Gill has been a psychotherapist, professor, and trainer, and she has a private practice working with women dealing with addictions and recovery from sexual abuse, child abuse, and trauma. She is a full professor. teaches psychology and courses in social work. She works as a trainer and consultant in human service settings and has developed and facilitated trainings on pertinent clinical and therapeutic issues. Her workshops are designed to provide child welfare staff with the knowledge and skills necessary to help assess and respond to families in crisis, including some techniques about family working relationships. So we're going to talk about some of those tonight. She also is a contributor and writer for Psychology Today, and I am happy as punch that I went on there today and read several of her articles, and they are absolutely wonderful. And I believe from New York, I want to welcome Dr. Teresa Gill to the program this evening. Dr. Gill, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, it's a pleasure, and you have written a book that is entitled, this may go down in Guinness World History as the longest title of a book, but it's called Women Who Were Sexually Abused as Children, Mothering, Resilience, and Protecting the Next Generation. That's an awesome sounding book. How did you come to the point in your life, Dr. Gill, to write this book? Why did this book become something that you were focusing on?
It's interesting because when I was going to school for my master's and my PhD, I didn't hear anything about survivor moms or mothering among women who were abused as children. And when I went to do research on the subject, there's only about 14 to 16 articles that are in the research journals on this topic, and that's over like a 25-year period. So this topic has been pretty much ignored. Lots and lots and lots of research on what happens to children short-term and long-term with abuse, and this book is specifically child sexual abuse, what happens to them. But if we're thinking that, you know, depression, anxiety, low self-esteem, feelings of shame, fear of intimacy, if those are all the consequences that happen because of abuse, how does that impact, you know, a really primary important role of women, which is mothering? So the subject really came because my clients brought it to me. So on the first day of therapy, I'll ask my client, what brings you to therapy? And they'll say that I have a history of sexual abuse, and I'm a mom, and I feel like it's interfering with my mothering. And I want to do something better and different for my children than what I had experienced as a child. So the topic came from my clients.
Wow. And, you know, when I started throwing my book together and trying to figure out if there was any books on that subject of a man, a boy being abused, you know, I went to bookstores. I tried to scan and research. I couldn't find hardly anything on the subject either.
And it still isn't that much.
No. And it's fascinating.
Not as compared to women and girls.
Yeah. But this is on motherhood. So I'm interested in how does – I mean, sometimes we think that – situations like this are obvious answers to the question. But from your point of view and from your clients and what you've done in your research and education and training, how does child abuse affect a mother when she's raising her own children?
Well, I actually asked my clients that question because at the time, this is over 20 years ago, I really didn't know. Because I wasn't trained in it and there wasn't information on it. So one client said to me that she notices that she can't play with her children. So her children set up a tea party and they get all dressed up and they have the table set with the plates for, with cookies and the tea and the cups. And they're being spontaneous and they're laughing and they're giggling. She wants to participate, but she doesn't know how to play, and she sits there and she feels numb. And in the process of therapy, what we found out was that in order for her to protect herself as a child, she was not spontaneous. She did not play. She, you know, needed to be invisible. She needed to be hidden in order not to be abused and to be a target of the rage and the escalation of violence that happened in her family. So here she is as a parent, and her children are asking her to do something very different than what she learned as a child to keep safe. And wow. She was terrified. And so what she did is she did exactly what she did as a mother, as she did as a child. She went numb and she collapsed. Another interesting thing that happens is that when a woman's daughter turns the same age that she was sexually abused, so if she was sexually abused at 6 and the daughter turns 6, her memories start to come up. And so wow. particularly with things like intimate parenting, like giving a bath or putting them to sleep in bed, or even having their child sit on their lap so they could read them a story. So for many women, it was extremely uncomfortable and disconcerting that they would be reading to their child and having their own memories come up.
And so it was like triggers in them that would trigger exactly. back their own past, their own childhood.
So their own children were triggering them. The wow. ones that they so desperately wanted to love. And they, when they had children, they had fantasies about it being very different than when they were growing up. And yet what they saw is because they were being triggered, that they were actually reenacting the unavailability to be with their children. Another woman said that, you know, she had a lot of fears that her husband and sons would abuse her child. And she said, you know, I have no reason to feel that. And if I really felt it and had evidence that they would hurt my daughter, I would be out of there. But I just constantly have this fear in the margins. And as we did therapy, what we found out was that was her childhood experience. And again, so a whole family was triggering that for her. So it becomes very difficult for them to mother their child in the way that they want to. One woman said to me, and this is what I wanted to get into the book, the point that as much as these women struggle, they have this power to want to do something different. So this woman said, I've already experienced the abuse once, and my perpetrator never had to suffer the consequences. And now in order for me to be a better mother, I have to go back one more time to experience so I can go through it to give my family something different. And I thought, that's really powerful. That's what I wanted to capture in the book. And that's what resilience is, the ability to overcome and do something different. And I felt like that needs to be explored, and we need to be able to harness that power of resiliency for our clients and for mothers so that they can move forward in their lives.
How many moms in the United States are dealing with this history of child sexual abuse? Any kind of figures on that?
Well, what we know is that 1 out of 4 women, sometimes 1 out of 5, 1 out of 4, that's what you read in the books. But if we take 1 out of 4 women are sexually abused before the age of 18, and the U.S. Census Bureau says there's 85 million moms, so 1 out of 4 potentially have a history of sexual abuse. That would mean 21 million mothers in the United States. 21 million.
How much weight do you put into that statistic, 1 out of 4, if 85 to 93% of the people that were abused never tell anybody? How do you offset that 1 out of 4?
There's much more information now because of Child Protective Services. My sense is it could be much more. Some people say it's 1 out of 5, so 20%, not 25. Mm-hmm. But it could be much more because there is a veil of silence. So I was at a book fair, and this woman comes up to me. She's about 70 years old. And she whispers, which I thought was interesting. So I had to be really attentive. And she said, "Thank you for writing this book. I would like to buy it. I wish I had it 30 years ago when I was taking care of and raising my children. But it's still too painful." And she whispered and she walked away. The same day, about an hour and a half later, the husband and a wife come up. And he is taking, he's the proactive person talking to me and showing the, his wife the book. She just walks away, doesn't even answer. And I thought, that's kind of weird. He says, "Okay, thank you, I'll come back." An hour later, he comes back and he says, "My wife is a survivor. She's having a really difficult day. But she told me that she wanted me to buy the book." So even today, you know, it's just a very difficult subject, and people don't talk about it. It's a secret. I think the sense is that if you tell the secret, it becomes real, and they try to somehow, you know, protect family members, manage their shame by holding back the secret.
Wow. Okay, thank you, Dr. Gill. That's just unbelievable first segment of the program. We're going to take our first break, but on the other side of this, I want to talk to you a little bit about why you use the same phrase that I do with the radio show, Breaking the Silence. And then we're also go into ACEs, and we're going to talk about some other things about resilience. So just on the other side of this break. So don't turn the dial. You hang right in there, about a minute and 20 seconds. We'll be right back to another segment of Breaking the Silence. Stay right there.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Thank you, Douglas. I sure appreciate you and the awesome work that the BBS radio station and network does completely around this world. So thank you for that commercial break. If you want to call in tonight, Douglas is right there sitting by the phone. Wait for it to vibrate, and he'd be glad to take care of your calls. 888-627-6008. Dr. Gill would love to hear from you if you have a comment or a question for her. If you're in the situation and maybe you would want to ask a question about your own motherhood or how your mom treated you, and if you see anything that just jumps out at you that you want to ask about or comment on, feel free to call 888-627-6008. Hope you get an opportunity this week while you're sitting at home to jump on my son's kind of revamped shatteredbythedarkness.com webpage. Feel free to get on there and look around, and my contact information is there also. Feel free to get that book and read it too. I have the Overcoming the Darkness Roadmap for Hope. Trying to finish that one up and get that to the printers as fast as we can. But another book that I know you may want to pick up is by our guest tonight, Dr. Teresa Gill, Women Who Were Sexually Abused as Children. You mentioned before we went to our break, Dr. Gill, the veil of silence. And as I was on the Psychology Today webpage looking up some of your articles and things, you have Breaking the Silence right there. What's that mean to you? What's that phrase bring up inside of you that you use that in your own work?
Because it's about the secret. And as long as you maintain the AA has some really, Alcoholics Anonymous has some really good sayings. And one of them is that you're as sick as your secret. And when you're trying to hold a secret and inside a secret that's really painful and hurtful, and on the outside you have to present as if you're functioning and you have to smile and you have to do what's expected of you, that that separation of what you're experiencing inside and what you have to do in terms of your roles on the outside is very disconcerting to women, to anyone. And we keep the secrets with my clients when I'm working with them. One place I go is to find out how the abuse was kept a secret as a child. And that becomes really important to being able to understand the silence of the adult today. So for some survivors, their perpetrators said, if you tell, it's going to destroy the family. If you tell, no one will believe you. If you tell, I'm going to hurt your cat. And this one father actually put the cat over the wood stove. And said, if you say anything, I'll drop him on the stove. So when you have those kinds of messages as a child in terms of you better keep the secret, you do, and you don't talk about it. The other thing is that for a little kid, they don't know how to put words to that experience. They don't have words like sexual abuse, or they don't have words like, you know, to explain what occurred to them. So that not having the words, they're not able to express their experience in terms of, you know, what occurred. So nobody can really be there to be helpful to them. The other thing I think that keeps it quiet is I interviewed a number of moms, and what I found out was that the age of the child made a difference in terms of their vulnerability. So if a child was under the age of 8 when they were sexually abused, then they internalized the blame. And they weren't able to disconnect the abuse from who they were. So for a child under the age of 8, what happened to me is bad, therefore I am bad. If the child was over the age of 8, they were able to say, what happened to me was bad, and the perpetrator is bad. I'm okay. And it's actually those people who abuse under the age of 8 to spend a much longer time in therapy because they had it wired into their thought process that somehow they were really bad, something was wrong with them, and it was their fault. And so they carry the shame with them. And they need, as adults, to learn to put it into words and to be able to express it so that they can be heard. And then to be able to kind of retrieve the little kid from the past to let them know it wasn't their fault. They did nothing
wrong.
That is
so deep. And there's so much meat on those bones about a person that, like you said, under 8, feeling that they are bad, that they've caused it. And the shame and the guilt, to this very day, I still deal with that in my own walk, my own life. That's powerful. Wow. How does the childhood trauma, and specifically the childhood sexual abuse, how does it impact in the long term in mental health? And, you know, mental health is really becoming a discussion point today like it never has been. So I think the iron is hot for us to get out and beat the bushes and sound the alarms and start talking as much as we can. But how does that childhood trauma and the sexual abuse impact long-term mental health? How is it affecting me today since I was abused for over 12 years of my life every day?
what happens, so now we have information on biology and neurobiology of trauma.
Yeah.
And Stephen Porges has written a lot about that, and he talks about the polyvagal theory. So what happens is that when somebody experiences a trauma, they have a physiological reaction. So your body either goes into fight flight, and you try to flee. But with most little kids, their efforts to flee mean nothing, particularly if the perpetrator is older than them and is manipulating them and is a regular person in their life, whether it be an uncle or a grandparent or a brother or a father or a stepfather or a neighbor. So if fighting or fleeing doesn't help to escape, then what they do is they go into collapse. And their bodies, they actually do shallow breathing. They have difficulty making eye contact. They just shut down because that's the only way that they can manage the overwhelming emotions that are coming up. They're facing life and death and looking at it right in the eye. And so what's really important is that if they were able to tell somebody how that person helps them deal with it after the disclosure can actually help reset the physiological system so that it could be calm again. But if you're dealing with chronic abuse day after day with no one to go to, then your physiological system gets set either in a fight-flight, hypervigilant state or in a hypo state, which is a state of collapse. Those two states have neurochemical things that happen in the body and the brain and can lead to depression, anxiety, PTSD, and when people experience shame, low self-esteem, particularly if they're under seven and it's their fault. So many times what happens is in order to manage that imbalance in the physiological state, they'll drink alcohol, they'll smoke pot, they'll smoke cigarettes, they will engage in addictive behaviors as a way of helping to rebalance a system that has been traumatized.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, anything to...
It's a little complicated, but I think it's really important. So our jobs as therapists is to help regulate their physiological system. Now they're actually saying it really doesn't matter whether it's depression or whether it's anxiety or whether it's PTSD. You have a physiological system that's in distress, that's carrying a story, and the body is actually, in present time, is actually filtering the story in present time.
Wow.
So if you have a traumatized body, then the things that you see are being filtered through that traumatized body. And it's only through a relaxed state that you can actually even learn information. And so I'm thinking about all these little kids who are traumatized, and we're trying to teach them history and math. A traumatized body and a traumatized brain that's in fight, flight, or collapse, it's only about survival. In survival, you cannot learn new information. You have to get the body out of survival in order to go past and head towards healing.
You know, one thing that I've always, and it just came to me, but I think it's an awesome illustration. Hopefully it is once I explain it. It seems like to me, that at least in my world, it's like making a pot of coffee with a filter and the grounds. And after the water, the hot water goes through, you have all the grounds left in the filter in the machine. And that's garbage. And then the rest of my life for years still ran through the old garbage grounds, and it always came out tainted of what that information that was being put in was supposed to affect me. And I never could get past anything because I was always running it through. I was sexually abused, even though I didn't tell anybody for years. It still ran through. Every day was still pouring through that garbage of my life. And until I finally opened the top of the emotional coffee machine and got rid of the junk and threw it out and say, okay, wait, here's a new filter, and I'm putting it in, did I start processing things back in somewhat of a normal frame of mind. But that took years before that ever happened.
And it's a brilliant way of describing how you go through life, unless you deal with the old hurts, how you go through life letting the old hurts manifest in present time. Your relationships to others, your experiences at work, your experiences with your children, even your own just internal experience of being alive gets filtered through that past. Or, you know, and you may have moments where there's just lovely times and everything is in sync, but it just continues to haunt you and keep revisiting it without conscious control until you're able to look at it and name it, break the silence, and move forward.
You know, Dr. Gill, I know for a fact there's women that are listening to the show tonight that are mothers that have been sexually abused. I have talked to them, and many of them are listening to you speak this evening. If they were sitting in front of you, what words of wisdom would you give them right now, if you could only give them one or two things that, hey, make sure you do this, what would that wisdom be for them as they're listening to the program? I'm sure they're all leaning in now, listening intently on what you're going to say. What kind of wisdom would you just offer to those women right now in a nutshell?
Find somebody that they can trust,
yeah,
that they can begin to heal, like a therapist or a counselor. All the women I interviewed, all of them, they all said that their therapist was a really critical person in their life because they felt safe many times for the first time. They felt that they could be heard, understood. They weren't judged. They weren't blamed. They also felt that that therapist was the mother they never had. That therapist showed them how to be kind and understanding, to communicate effectively, to deal with problems, and that therapist then became their role model of how to be a mother to their kids. And the therapist was able to help them work out current situations with their children in terms of just really concrete tasks of how to do something, how to manage something. So I think having a therapist to help you maneuver through the old traumas is really important. The other thing that I think is really important is another protective factor for mothers is having good people around them. When we're born, we don't have a choice of who our family is. We come into the world and they're the authorities over our lives. But once we're adults, we have the power to choose. And if you're going to choose based on a depressed state, or you're going to choose from a hypervigilant state, those relationships are not going to work out. Many times what happens is we reenact our childhoods in present-day current situations because we don't have the skills to maneuver through difficult times. And we pick people who just re-abuse us.
So oh, my.
Picking people who can be kind and loving and attentive is going to be one of the most important protective factors for moms.
Wow,
in fact,
I tell you.
They say it is, and the research that is out there shows that.
I guarantee you, you have hundreds of women right now went, oh, yeah, I thought my picker was broken. It wasn't that. It was that you didn't deal. You're still dealing with the abuse in your life. And you do end up having bad selections of relationships in your life if you don't deal with what the past has done to you.
Mm-hmm.
It does allow us to revisit and we allow ourselves to be abused over and over again, because even in my own life, I thought, I deserve this.
Right.
I deserve to be treated that way. I don't deserve anything better. I deserve my friends to lie to me or treat me like trash or let me always do this or always, you know. So that is deep, too. I tell you, we're going to take our last break, but 888-627-6008. If this didn't get you to where you want to call and give us some comments or a question or two for Dr. Gill, I don't know what will. But on the other side of this break, we're going to jump into ACEs. And we've talked a little bit about that with the fright and freeze, the flight and freeze mode and things of that order. But we're going to talk about ACEs and how also some protective factors in the lives of mothers that they can implement in their own lives. So join us just on the other side for the last segment of Breaking the Silence, on the other side of this commercial break.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
The first 40 minutes of this program have just flown by, and we have Dr. Teresa Gill with us. And you're from New York State,
yes.
Dr. Gill, is that correct?
How's things going up there? I am, but the accent is from New York City.
How's things going for you up there with this craziness in the world in New York right now?
Well, we are the epicenter. My daughter lives there. In 2 weeks, our lives have been turned upside down. And, you know, we have over 100,000 people just in New York State who have been confirmed to have coronaviruses, and the death numbers are rising. I teach, so they gave us an extra week of vacation just so that we can get all our classes online. And I'll be doing virtual teaching as of next week. But when I asked my students, I have 5 classes that I teach, 33 in a class, and I asked them how many would prefer to go online. 3 said yes, and 30 said no. So it's challenging time for all of us. It's a little frightening. And our governor has been very good. He's quarantining everyone, you know, social distancing, stay at home, and coming and talking to us about every day, about what the numbers are and how it's going to be rectified and what they're doing with the hospitals and health staff, et cetera. But certainly challenging. I think people in America have not had to face these kinds of things. We've been privileged.
Yeah, I think we're going to look at the world differently on the other side of this and realize we have a lot of things to be thankful for that we took for granted. And we're going to come out stronger. I really believe that. But it may be a long road before we get there.
I haven't had time yet, because I've been putting all my classes online and be going to virtual tutorials of how to put it on Blackboard. But As of tomorrow will be the day where I can land and get my 2 feet back on the ground. I'm going to use tomorrow as a way of thinking about how am I going to use this time for the next 6 weeks or 2 months or whatever it is to have goals for myself and to kind of reevaluate my values in life and what's important to me, and make sure that I include that in my day. Plus, having structure. So the structure that I have, all of us have had, like going to work and getting kids out to school, that's all gone. We have to spend time to think about what our structure is going to look like during the day so we can kind of take control back in our lives. But it literally has only been 2 weeks, and the world has been turned upside down, at least in the United States.
But doesn't it seem like it's been 6 months already? It's only been two weeks, but it seems like it's been forever already. This is going to be a long road.
Yeah, it feels like the norm.
Yeah, it really does. It really does.
Yeah.
Did when you wrote this book about women being sexually abused, without jumping into a real personal question, is there something that, besides just the therapy, is there anything in your own life that caused you to be very interested in this lane of work as a therapist? Or is it just something that...
It kind of came to me. It was actually a group of women that were in a sexual abuse survivor group. The agency that was hosting their group dismantled, and they went out and found a therapist. And they interviewed a number of therapists, and I was the one that they hired. So it was a learning experience. Our clients teach us lots about who we are. So many of them also had a recovery from addictions, and they were in the 12-step meetings. So when they would have their yearly sobriety, and they would talk about their treatment and what they did for themselves, their healing process, they would talk about. Now, it's interesting because at that time in AA, it was keep it green, only talk about the moment and today. Don't talk about the past. Don't get lost in the past. And there's some validity in that, but the women said, we need to talk about our past because our past brought us here
to
using, because that's how we manage the pain. And so when people would come up to them and say, who are you seeing, they would refer clients to me. So primarily that was my group that I worked with. But I have this saying that nobody goes through life unscathed. Everybody has a story to tell. Nobody has a perfect childhood or a perfect family. And we all have to maneuver through our own histories in order to move forward.
Right. You know, I think the listening audience to this program probably are the most educated audience on ACEs that there probably is out there, because we talked about ACEs every Sunday night, somewhat, some vein, some thought about it, because that's just what I believe in as I go around and speak around the country. But the resiliency part, that is kind of a new catchphrase, a new word that everybody's throwing out there. And we have an author of a book next week that's going to be talking about that, has a whole book just on it. But what does resiliency mean to you, and what's it mean to be able to be resilient, especially for what your topic of your book is, for mothers that have been sexually abused?
So what resiliency theory explores is why some individuals, despite distressing life events, are able to adapt and continue to function, while other people don't, and they find their obstacles more difficult to cope with. So resiliency is the ability to adapt and recover from stressful or traumatic life experiences. So if you have two kids, both sexually abused, both same socioeconomic status, both family constellation, why does one make it and one doesn't? And so when you look, that's what resiliency is. So when you look at resiliency, you are balancing risk factors, things like growing up with a single parent, growing up in poverty, one of the biggest risk factors, growing up with a parent that has an unmedicated or untreated mental illness, growing up with a parent that has an active addiction, growing up with physical abuse, sexual abuse. So those are risk factors. Then the protective factors are the things in your life that support resiliency, that help you to overcome adversities. So what we try to do is we look at what are somebody's risk factors and what are their protective factors. If you have more protective factors than risk factors, the chances of you being resilient are increased. If you have more risk factors than protective factors, the chances of you being resilient are decreased.
What are those protective factors?
So there are protective factors as children, and then there's protective factors as an adult, as a mom. Uh-huh. So one of the protective factors, and they overlap. So one of the protective factors as a mom, but also as a child, is knowing that there was one person that loved you. Mm. It's absolutely essential. And if there was one, many of my clients, for instance, one client, she said, you know, my mother was out of it. She wasn't there. My father was the person who ran the house. He was authoritarian and used, you know, strict punishment and yelled a lot. Her brother was the one that sexually abused her. And not to get heavy, but he came home from college, supposedly, she said, under the guise to do his laundry. But it was really to abuse her. And she said that during those times, she would think about her aunt who lived out on the West Coast, and she would dream of her aunt, and her aunt was the light in all the darkness. And she only went to see her aunt 1 week out of the summer. But that aunt sustained her in terms of the desire to want to live, and her aunt cared for her and took care of her, and she knew she was out there for her. So that is really, really critical protective factor. That's why when my students do service learning and they go out to schools to work with children, I said, in your service learning experience, you have to put in 25 hours, but you can't put the 25 hours in 1 week because it's your vacation time and because it fills your needs of being able to balance work and school and service learning. You need to be able to say, every week, I'm going to spend 2 hours with this child, because how they got hurt is that people promised to be there and abandoned them. And if you're going to make a promise to be there, you need to do it consistently, because otherwise you're just reenacting the abuse that they're experiencing at home. So I make sure my client, my students are really clear of what their role is, and their role is to be mentors. So it could be a family member. It could be a neighbor. Many of my clients said, my second family was my friend's parents. I stayed at their house. That became my role model of a mother and a normal family. For some, it was being at school, after school care. And there was a teacher that they bonded to. So all of us can play really important roles in being present for somebody and being there for them and being caring, because that's number one protective factor. Another protective factor for mothers and for children, and this surprised me, and I shouldn't because I grew up very religious, but a spiritual belief that there was a higher power, someone, a God or someone out there that was watching over them. Mm-hmm. And prayer helps keep them feeling safe, helps them feel loved, helps give a sense of calm when they were under stress. So having a spiritual belief was very important to many of them. And then as a mother, having extended family that are functioning, because what happens with many of my survivors is that their families are still dysfunctional. They're still drinking.
Right.
There's still violence. They haven't changed. So they don't want their children around that, so they lose the support system of the extended family. Many times they create friendship groups that will substitute for that. But having somebody who's co-parenting with you is another huge protective factor for mothers. That's why it's so important to help them learn communication skills, because all relationships get hooked, and you want to be able to know how to dissolve those hooks so that you can rebond. And they talk about being ruptured and repaired. You know, relationships rupture. We have to have the skills to repair them so that we can move forward. And sometimes relationships move forward with the rupture, but it hasn't been really repaired, and there's old resentments. So that becomes really critical, the relationship.
Yeah.
Relationship,
you know, tell you what,
the hurt was, relationship is what the healing is.
Yeah. The I really thoroughly enjoyed, and I want to just recommend everybody to get the book, but also to get on psychologytoday.com and read. Just type in Teresa Gill, G-I-L, and you're Breaking the Silence page or whatever has all these articles. And the one that you wrote on spirituality was beautiful. I read every one of those, and it was just really good, solid writing. I just really learned something out of every one of those. So I encourage everybody to hop on there. Dr. Gill, the hour is just about up. I just can't thank you enough for joining us. For this hour just flew by. If anybody wanted to reach out to you or find out more about you or to get a copy of the book, what would be the best way for them to be able to do that, Dr. Gill?
They can go on Amazon.com and put in Teresa Gill, T-E-R-E-S-A-G-I-L, and the book will come up. They can go, in order to get in touch with me, on Psychology Today, also put in my name, T-E-R-E-S-A, G-I-L. Many times people put an H or they put an extra L.
Right.
Get rid of that. and the Psychology Today will have a place where you can contact me.
Fantastic.
Have an
well,
email
I appreciate
address.
Yeah, it's all right there, and it's easy access. It was easier than I thought to get in there and look around, and it was very enjoyable this afternoon. I really, really enjoyed those articles, so I just encourage everybody to do that. Doctor, all the way from the great state of New York, I just appreciate you spending an hour with us tonight and sharing your wisdom and your book, and I hope you stay safe, and thank you for sharing your wisdom as a therapist with us and to all of our listeners. Thank you for being here.
And thank you so much for inviting me.
If there's anything ever I can do for you, you just holler and I'll be right there.
Same here.
Thank you, Dr. Gill.
Okay,
before we close
you. Have
out
a good
tonight,
night.
You do the same. Before we close out tonight, I want to encourage you to make sure that you stay tuned for our entire month of April, Warriors of Hope Month. And Joe and Darty Hendershot is going to be kind of helping me with that. But we're going to be having some wonderful guests the whole month of April. And next week, Christian Moore, the author of The Resilience Breakthrough. And you ought to get on Amazon or wherever the good books are sold and type in Christian Moore and just look at the cover. I love the cover. It's like concrete with a crack in it and a weed coming up through the middle of it, or a growth of a green plant. And just an awesome, awesome visual picture of how resilience needs to be in our lives. And then Consuelo, Kick Bush, and Judge Stephen Teske, and we have so many other people that's going to be here in the month of April. But as always, I want to close out as we go into another wild and crazy week in the United States. No matter what's going to happen to us this week, no matter what's happened to you in the past, I always want to encourage you to reach in deep. And remember that there's always hope. There's always hope. Join us right here next week, 8 o'clock Central Time, for another live edition from Houston, Texas, of Breaking the Silence. God bless you. Have an awesome week. We'll talk to you soon. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-7262. 6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence. We'll be right back.